Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Wednesday, April the 10th. And welcome to our commentary. Well, I think the big story today, I mean, pretty much overshadowing everything else, is the inflation figures that came out this morning. They had a big impact over at the stock market, where I think they closed a few minutes ago, or they will close a few minutes ago, will close in a few minutes. And the market was down like 400 points. And of course, this is a reaction to the inflation figures that came out higher than expected. And again, look, I understand these economists are smart people and, they do their best. I get it. But you don't have to be an economist to know what's going on. All you have to do is put gasoline in your car, buy food, and purchase or pay for car insurance. And I think you've got a pretty good idea that inflation is high. Those three things, homeowners insurance too, if you own a home, that'll drive you crazy too. So, I mean, the essentials of life, the things that you need to live are the ones going up. I just put gasoline in my car, $3.45. Well, that's higher than it was, I don't know, a couple months ago, $2.75, something like that. So that's what's going on. I mean, inflation pressures are still in this economy. And I argue over and over and over again that everything has to do with the price of gasoline. If gasoline is $3.50, $3, $2.75, that's going to drive up the cost of shipping, the cost of living. And how do you fix that problem? Well, one way to fix it is you produce and you produce as much gasoline as you can. So you flood the market with oil so that, the price comes down. It will come down if you flood the market with oil. Now, to be fair, the United States is producing a lot of oil at the moment. But, again, we need to be looking for more oil. We need to be focused on a campaign to develop as much oil here in the United States as possible, because when we purchase oil from countries that are, like, for example, the situation in the Middle East right now, Iran and Israel could be at war next week or sooner than that. Well, that's going to drive up the cost of gasoline, to say the least. So again, it's not an easy question, and I'm not trying to make it sound as simple as just gasoline, but it is. Gasoline. You take control of gasoline, bring it down to $2 a gallon, and you're going to see a lot of the inflation pressure come out of this economy. I don't think you have to be an economist to figure that one out, because gasoline, everybody uses gasoline, especially the trucks that are out there shipping and moving the stuff that we eat and consume. Now, in the case of homeowners insurance, and in the case of business insurance, and in the case of whatever kind of insurance, one of the problems we've got there in many cities is the lawlessness. For example, all these car hijackings and stuff like that going on in the cities. I mean, that drives up the cost of insurance. Even if you don't live in those cities, I mean, cost of doing business goes up. Everybody's premium goes up a little bit. So not a good day, not a good day for inflation in the United States. And it probably doesn't help that we're spending as much money as we're spending either. But that's another topic. So, I think President Biden and the Democrats thought that they could get inflation out of the way by the summer. Well, that's not going to happen, because obviously interest rates are not coming down anytime soon. In fact, they may go up. This may be the tipping point where the Federal Reserve says we're going to have to increase interest rates. They've been holding back, hoping for a break on with the inflation figure. They may not be able to hold back too much longer, so I wouldn't be surprised if interest rates have to go up, if not this spring, certainly by the time summer gets here. So the White House thought that they could do away with inflation. They're not going to. They're not going to at the moment. Well, you may have seen my post over at the American Thinker today talking about remittances and Mexico. Mexico at the moment is getting about $60 billion in remittances from the United States. Now, remittances in Spanish, they call it remesas, but remittances have always been a reality in the relationship between Mexico and the United States. Going back to whenever people started coming over, you've had this market or you've had this avenue, whatever you want to call it, where people who come here to work send money back to their families. Now, this is also happening in other countries, but in the case of Mexico, of course, the figure is the highest. And they come here, they work, they send $100 to their families, you know, and it creates that kind of a situation. I think for most of the years, people didn't really pay attention to it because everybody knew that the intent of the remittance was one family here or one family member here supporting a family back home. And I think there was a sense of, hey, you know, let's get out of the way and let people support their families. It's a good thing. But now it's gotten to the point that it's $60 billion. And as I write in my post, it's not only a lot of money, but it's a huge factor in the Mexican economy. It's literally keeping the peso strong because all those dollars are flowing into the Central Bank of Mexico, and they're actually keeping the peso right now quite strong. Now, that could change because Mexico cannot afford to have such a strong peso at the moment because that hurts tourism and it hurts their exports to the United States. But the bottom line is that these remittances also have created another problem for Mexico, and that is that Mexico has really grown to depend on these people who come over. This is one of the reasons they need more and more of these people to come over to the United States, because they need those dollars going south. And it also exposes Mexico, and this is where I've heard this from many Mexican friends, it exposes Mexico to basically having to negotiate with the United States. For example, what if the president of the United States says, look, we're going to put a tax on these remittances because that's a lot of money leaving our country. You know, what if that happens? We understand that President Trump, you know, mentioned this to President López Obrador when they were trying to negotiate a solution to the border crisis. This is one of the ways that he got President López Obrador to go along with Remain in Mexico. I don't know if that's true. I've heard that from many people. But the point is, it exposes Mexico and it creates an economic relationship between the two countries where Mexico is too dependent on these dollars coming from the United States. And that could be, as I say, give the President of the United States a position of authority and power in negotiating with Mexico. Mexico needs these dollars. So it's a crazy situation. But it also, another thing that it does, and I've heard this from many Mexican friends, is that it keeps the Mexican government from having to deal, or I should say Mexican politicians, from having to deal with some of their real problems, like, for example, the energy sector, highly underdeveloped. I mean, Mexico should have a much bigger energy sector, but they don't have any money to explore or to look for oil. It should also force Mexican politicians to do something about the agricultural sector, highly underdeveloped in Mexico, but they don't do that because they keep depending on these remittances. So check out my post. That's a lot of money going to Mexico. I'm not sure about this, but it could be their largest source of foreign cash, that is the money that comes in remittances. I've heard that it's bigger than petroleum, and I think it is, and bigger than some of the other experts. So that's a lot of money, $60 billion. That is an unbelievable amount of money. Well, I have a post coming out on Thursday talking about NPR, National Public Radio. Somebody from National Public Radio came out and gave an interview and basically said that NPR is a little bit too liberal. And it's not just the fact that they're liberal, but the fact that the entire staff is way too liberal and too willing to go along with the liberal talking points. For example, they talk about the Russia story and, you know, the Hunter Biden laptop, how the network was just willing to go along with Democrat talking points. I think this is really a tragedy, what's happening at NPR. I used to listen to NPR quite a bit, you know, years ago, because it was a very good option. But I haven't really paid attention to it in quite some time. And the problem with NPR is that this is publicly funded. So, I mean, they're getting money from the United States government. And they're not even representing the American people. They're basically representing, you know, one segment of the American people and overlooking the fact that lots of other Americans live in the United States. So if I were the leadership over at NPR, I would definitely make sure that they clean up the house and they start bringing in more conservative viewpoints and at least have more journalists in that organization who have a more balanced view of the world. According to the man who wrote this article, his last name is Berliner, and Mr. Berliner, he said that in their editorial staff, they have 87 Democrats and zero Republicans. I mean, that's obscene. That is completely obscene. I have no idea how the management of NPR allowed that to happen, but they need to clean up that house very quickly. And if I was a member of Congress, I'd be introducing a motion to stop the funding of NPR, because you cannot have a publicly funded television station or radio station with that kind of bias. Just a quick note on this day in history: in 1970, Paul McCartney quit the Beatles, and that was the end of the Beatles. Now, it wasn't a great shock if you know the story of the group. By this time in 1970, they were not even a group anymore. They hadn't really recorded for almost half a year. But this was the day that McCartney said, "I'm done." He quit the Beatles, and that was the end of it. That was the end of it. No more Beatles after that. There were some records that were released later, and that's because they had some material recorded. But the end of the Beatles officially happened on this day in 1970, or 54 years ago. And who would have believed 54 years ago that we'd still be talking about the Beatles and still buying their music, which a lot of people are doing 54 years later. Have a great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you.